Hello, and welcome to the Sky U podcast by the Daily Gopher. I'm Chris, Go AU Fur. With me this week is Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
That was ugly.
Yeah. Blake, Iowa Gopher, he's here too.
I am here. I can confirm I am in fact here.
All right, so if you are listening to this, you are probably in some form of a mood, and it's unlikely to be an excited mood. So let's take a brief moment, talk about something exciting. We are excited, as the blog, to announce the return of Homefield Apparel as a podcast sponsor. Not familiar with Homefield? They're going to have stuff that you love to wear. Comfortable gear, cool vintage designs. They just released an expansion, actually, of their Minnesota line with sweet historic Goldie volleyball designs, in addition to the designs they launched earlier this summer. But if you want those sweet volleyball threads, you're going to need to check out the number 7 ranked Gophers in person at the PAV and buy them on site. The rest of the amazing designs can be found on homefieldapparel.com. Everyone on the blog freaking loves this stuff. You may recall from the pod earlier this summer how over the moon we were that they were finally releasing Minnesota stuff gear. The gear is fantastic, comfortable, great throwback designs you aren't going to see anywhere else. Nothing makes us happier than great Gopher gear, so if you want some of your own, use the code DAILYGOPHER during checkout at homefieldapparel.com for 15% off your first purchase with the good brand. That is code DAILYGOPHER at homefieldapparel.com. All right, with the exciting return of a sponsor out of the way, the hell was that? The absolute hell was that? I mean, I didn't watch it. At all. Like, maybe 5 minutes of it. I had other things I was working on, and I figured, I read Blake's preview. I believe in Blake. Blake doesn't steer me wrong. They'll win this game big. Blake steered me wrong, but I'm not mad at Blake for that, because Blake wrote his preview with common sense in mind, that Minnesota's a better team than Bowling Green. And then that thing that was Saturday happened. And when I saw how upset everybody else was, I said, I don't need to watch this. So what you've heard from me is about all I can give in terms of feedback on this game, because all I know is we lost, and we shouldn't have lost. Which one of you wants to rant first?
I think Andy should go first. I feel like he's got... Because Andy, were you there?
I unfortunately was sitting in Huntington Bank Stadium for that apocalypse of 3 hours on Saturday morning and afternoon. Yeah, I mean it was atrocious. It was I mean where to even start? The Gopher offense is in deep trouble. You know, and PJ Fleck alluded to the fact that, well, you were missing Muhammad Ibrahim, which, you know, that hadn't stopped the Gopher offense the last 2 weeks. And then Chris Ottman-Bell goes down on the first play of the game, and for some reason he tried making some excuse that, well, their entire game plan was revolving around him, and once he went down, you know, wasn't really able for any of the other wide receivers to step in. That's a load of BS. I'm sorry, PJ, but you got to be able to make better adjustments to that if you're going to be a head coach of a Big Ten. If you're telling me the entire offensive game plan goes down on the first play of a game because your star receiver gets hurt and you can't figure out some way to do something, that's just awful. Yeah, the offensive line got absolutely destroyed by a MAC defensive line that were 50 pounds less and 4 inches less across the board. Tanner Morgan had arguably his worst game at quarterback, and half that was because he had to fear for his life because the offensive line could not block anybody to save their lives. But when he did have time to throw, he missed receivers left and right. The receivers, other than Chris Ottman-Bell, Daniel Jackson got open a couple of times. Dylan Wright, where are you, bro? PJ said he didn't have a huge role because they were game planning for Crabb instead. I think that's an excuse. He didn't do much in Colorado either. If you're going to be a actual number two receiver on this team, you got to figure out some way to get open and show up. And the defense, you know, relatively held their own. They gave up a couple of weak scores that, you know, would have been nice to stop a MAC offense when you really need to stop a MAC offense because your offense looked worse than a MAC offense. But, you know, you can't really fault them too much for giving up whatever it was, 14 points to a MAC team and the rest of your team not being able to get the win.
14 points should be completely surmountable for a Big Ten team. In fact, in most games you'd go, oh, they gave up 14 points. Wonderful. And you'd be happy about it.
But yeah, I mean, between the actual, you know, execution by your offensive veterans who have been here now 3, 4, 5 years in some cases, Sam Schluter had a awful game. Like, we're talking back to like 2018 level Schluter when you're wondering, why is he starting? Why is he, you know, he could not block anyone on Saturday. And I'm just wondering, you know, where are the coaching adjustments for the second game in a row against a MAC team? PJ Fleck, Mike Sanford got completely outcoached, especially in halftime adjustments. There were none at all. What happens there? I mean, and I can't even figure out what to do. I mean, are we getting closer to a Rob Smith situation where, I mean, something has to happen? And I think Blake has his opinions on that. I mean, if the Gophers go to Purdue this weekend and lay an egg, I don't know how you can't fire somebody. And that's not even getting me started on the Rob Winger situation, which is a whole nother thing. How the Gopher special teams can still be this bad at execution this many years, it's just mind-boggling. Yeah, you know, it's frustrating. Obviously, you can hear it. It's insanely frustrating, and there's no way that year five any Gopher team should play that poorly against that level of a team. We're not talking like this is MAC champion level team. We're talking about Bowling Green came in literally ranked one of the five worst FBS teams in the country statistically. And the Gophers just absolutely crapped the bed.
Well, the big question, of course, becomes, can we fix it? Blake, you sort of, you know, alluded to something you felt could fix it. I don't think anyone is super... Yeah, I mean, a different offensive scheme would certainly fix it. In lieu of a different offensive coordinator, what do we do? And I say we being, as frustrated fans, what would need to change for the Gophers to see more success as the season continues?
Well, I mean, I'll say this. I have two takeaways from this game. And one is, as you already alluded to and I wrote in the blog, if PJ Fleck is serious about staying at Minnesota long-term, then Mike Sanford should be coaching for his job the rest of the way. I mean, you look at the trajectory of the offense since, you know, Kirk Schrocka left after 2019 and Mike Sanford came in 2020, 2021. The running game has been great, but you've also benefited from having Muhammad Ibrahim, one of the best running backs in the country, operating behind a pretty good offensive line in the same similar zone blocking scheme that we had in Shiraka. So, you know, Sanford still he still gets some credit for that, I will say, but just the regression of the passing game is difficult to ignore, and especially the way that Tanner Morgan's taking a step back and the offense seems built less to his strengths from a standpoint of one. The RPO was great for Tanner because he got to make simple reads and quick decisions, and on Saturday that was not the case for him, especially with an offensive line that couldn't pass protect if their life dependent on it. He wasn't that there were these long, slow developing routes and just gave Bowling Green an opportunity to pin their ears back and tee off on Tanner basically the whole way. We're going to get away from those quick, efficient passes that are kind of Tanner's bread and butter. And, you know, would buy him more time with the offensive line that he has. And two, one of the big things under Shiraka was, you know, operating different plays out of the same formations, just getting creative and keeping the defense off balance. Whereas with Sanford now, it's the same formations are always the same plays. The play calling is predictable, especially first down, second down, third down. Across the board, there's a stunning lack of creativity in an attempt to, you know, throw the defense off. There's this mentality that I think we've all kind of picked up on from these non-conference games where, you know, Fleck and Sanford and whoever seem to think that they can just line up and impose their will on the opposing team without having to break out the playbook. clearly that they, I mean, they, that's been a trend since Fleck got here, and he's been playing with fire, and he finally got burned. So to me, that's the big takeaway here is there's talent on this team. There's talent on this offense, specifically the offensive line. We know they can recruit good receivers. We know what Tanner can do. If they're not executing and they're not being put in position to see, that's entirely on the coaching. So I think this is a fixable issue. And it's entirely on the coaching staff, being the players at the end of the day have to execute, but I'm not seeing them being put in position to execute the game properly. So that's my first takeaway from this game. My second takeaway is something I didn't come to immediately after the game. It took a couple days of perspective, but some important perspective here. So, you know, Kirk Ferentz in his 9th season in Iowa lost to a 5-7 Western Michigan team. And then in his 14th season in Iowa City, he lost to a 7-6 Central Michigan team. Even more recently than that, Northwestern in 2018 lost to a 4-8 Akron team and then went on to win the Big Ten West. So I bring this up because just to point out that Minnesota is not the first team to have an embarrassing loss at home against a MAC team, and that they certainly won't be the last. Does that make it any less unacceptable? No. I mean, Big Tens, as a general rule, shouldn't lose to MAC teams, plain and simple. But it happened, and people are right to be upset. It's good that people care. But to me, a loss like this puts a team at a crossroads. This can either be a flat tire that sends their season into a ditch, or they can pull over, change the tire, get back on the road. It's all about the response at this point. That's where my focus is. I'm done dwelling on Bowling Green. There's really no changing the outcome of that game. But there are at least 8 games left to be decided. So Minnesota just needs to take a hard look in the mirror now and figure out what needs to happen so that Bowling Green does not happen again. Yeah, that's my perspective on this game at this point.
You actually hit on what my very next point after you finished was going to be, which was, in no way am I predicting that suddenly Minnesota, you know, wins the Big Ten West. I don't honestly have any idea what Minnesota team is going to show up on a given week right now, because the one that showed up against Colorado is not the one that showed up against Bowling Green. So, and the one that showed up against Miami wasn't the one that showed up against Colorado. So, you know, at this point, maybe we just run Purdue off the field and win by 2 touchdowns. I have no idea. The point is that what I really liked from your take was that Minnesota got burned 100%. It is frustrating to no end. I know we're not alone. I have the texts in my phone from tons of friends who are Gopher fans who are like, what the hell? But if you're going to get burned and you have goals as a team, and this would be the time to get burned, I guess that's your silver lining. You can come back from this. It doesn't cost you a shot at a division title. It doesn't cost you a shot at having a good season in the Big Ten. Now, as you say, crossroads, they actually have to do those things. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat that I somehow think that's suddenly going to happen. I'm certainly more pessimistic about that than when, you know, I was in Boulder enjoying a 30-0 romp. But here we are, you know. Oddly enough, it could certainly be worse.
Well, and I'll just take the typical position I'm in is the village pessimist and say, you know, I mean, it's one thing if you know, you just get away from the game plan and you struggle and things like that. But I mean, it was a virtual systematical failure on Saturday. And I think, I mean, the problem is we've seen trends where, as we've said, the passing game since Mike Sanford has taken over has completely gone downhill. And if it, you know, wasn't so concerning that we've seen this under other Mike Sanford coach teams, you may know there's a quarterback in Green Bay named Jordan Love who was going to be talked about as a, you know, he still was a first-round draft pick, but he was talked about as a potential Heisman candidate until Mike Sanford came in and coached him his senior year, and Jordan Love had the worst year of his career. We've seen Tanner Morgan regress significantly under a season and a quarter now under Mike Sanford. Could be a coincidence, sure, but I mean, that's an alarming trend, to say the least. And, you know, obviously the Gopher offense looked good against Colorado. You know, they ran the ball all over them. The Gophers couldn't run the ball to save their lives last week. Purdue will be ready to stop the run on Saturday. If the Gophers struggle to run on Saturday and Tanner Morgan's got to put this game on his shoulders, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And, you know, like I said, I'll be the one who's going out, and they may come out and have another Colorado-like game, and they may blow Purdue out of the water, and I sure hope that's right. I didn't see it after the Miami game, and then it was happened, and then we got all excited, and then last week happened. But I think if the passing game has to win them this game and it fails miserably again, you've got to look at making a change if you're PJ Fleck, because the fan base is going to turn on you in a hurry. And you've got Matt Simon sitting there. We don't know what Matt Simon's role is in this offense. Nobody ever talks about it. I mean, he supposedly was the co-OC at one point. What role does Matt Simon actually have in trying to figure out, you know, the game plan and things like that for this team? I don't know. I last week was a definite kick in the balls. There's no doubt about that. And I sure, like I said, I hope I'll be completely wrong about the rest of the season going forward, and they can pull a Northwestern and bounce back and have a great Big Ten season. But I'm very worried about our passing game right now if our offensive line cannot create running game holes. And I think, you know, with a veteran offensive line like this, you've got to look squarely at game plan and play calling as your first thing that has to be drastically changed.
You know, normally I'd ask us what made us laugh this weekend. I don't know. I didn't do a lot of laughing. I did a lot of projects around the house. I didn't do a lot of laughing. On the plus side, I was extremely productive with projects around the house. It's amazing. It's amazing how much you can get done on your to-do list for, you know, things related to remodeling your basement when you just go, oh, this game isn't worth my time, and you don't watch it. You get so much more done, guys. It's crazy. It's crazy how much you get done. All right, we're going to get to Purdue, but before we do, let's change for a little bit. I want to go to volleyball, who continues to win and continues to show themselves to be a good, borderline great team. Maybe still not ready to take on the tops of the nation, but certainly it seems as though several other teams in the Big Ten who are top-notch have had some ups and downs. So I'm just going to turn that over to Andy and let him fill in the blanks.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen success now for several weeks for the Gopher volleyball team. They opened up Big Ten play last week. They hosted Michigan on Thursday night, and I think you saw some of that toughness finally coming out. The Gophers jumped up to a quick 2-0 lead against the Wolverines, and then all of a sudden they looked terrible. Wolverines came back and won sets 3 and 4, and it was coming down to a winner-take-all fifth set when the Gophers finally decided, you know what, we're going to make sure we don't lose our Big Ten opener at home, and they battled back and picked up set 5 for a 3-2 win. Michigan's a good team, not a great team. They were receiving votes in the national polls. They'll finish probably sixth in the Big Ten. But it was nice to see the Gophers come back and do what they needed to do, especially because they were one of the only top Big Ten teams that avoided the season-opening upset bug. Ohio State was ranked number 3rd in the country. They were undefeated. Purdue went into Columbus and knocked them off. And Wisconsin was ranked number 2 in the country and went to Maryland, where Maryland shocked the Badgers, winning 3-2 in an upset that is not even close. It's the biggest in the country so far this season. Maryland, I don't know if they had ever beaten Wisconsin in volleyball, or if they had, it's been a very, very, very long time. So an impressive win for the Terps, which got Gopher fans a little nervous because Maryland came in here to the Pav on Sunday afternoon to take on the Gophers. Maryland undefeated at 13-0. And the Gophers, whether it was a hangover for Maryland or whether Minnesota just dominated, they destroyed Maryland, winning easily a 3-set sweep. Maryland didn't score more than 13 points in a single set. the Gophers were on point and just absolutely wasted the Terrapins, finishing the match in just over an hour. It was a really impressive ass-kicking by Minnesota. So the Gophers are 2-0 in the Big Ten, sit atop the conference. But as we said, you know, every time we talk about it, the Big Ten, there is no rest. The Gophers get their first showcase game this upcoming weekend. Friday night, they head to Madison against those number 5 Badgers. And hopefully it will be another epic Gopher-Badger clash in volleyball as it has been the last few seasons. But Minnesota will get their first big road test against Wisconsin, and then they head to Northwestern the night after that, which should be a pretty easy sweep. Northwestern's not very good. So, hopefully Gophers-Badgers Friday night can be pretty epic. 8 p.m. start live on BTN, so tune in.
All right, so we've got hockey to talk about as well. Before we do that, I want to know, can Blake name any Gopher hockey captain? I don't care if it's the men or the women.
Not a chance, no. That's already, even if I had retained some names from last season, I have no idea if they'd still on it. I mean, I've just
Blake, can
I've
you name Minnesota's the men's goalie?
Oh, shit, what's his name? Is it Jack something?
Yeah.
Jack. Oh man, because he's the one that you hear his name so often during games.
Andy, you want to help him out?
I don't have it. I'm great.
He's on the right track. Jack LaFontaine would be the Gopher goalie. That would be the reigning Mike Richter Award winner as the best collegiate goalie in the country, and also one of the Gophers' captains this season.
I am going to propose we do a different bit this year. I'm up for Blake asks a hockey question, but I would instead propose we have Andy write a trivia question for Blake each week. And we throw a, and I don't want them to be stumpers, Andy, unless he really starts rolling. I want you to just throw a question at him each week. Are we up for this? Is this a bit we want to try out on the pod on a weekly?
I mean, I'm going to fail miserably, but you know, I never shy away from a challenge.
Well, I'm actually hopeful that you're going to just get so competitive that you're gonna like just become a religious hockey fan, and next thing I know what we're gonna have is a bit where you and Andy like break down you know, schematic things, and you know, we go into, you know, who cares about talking about the rest of the sports. We have a separate podcast for Andy and Blake to talk hockey is what I'm hoping for.
That would certainly be best case scenario.
All right, Andy, Gopher hockey, men's and women, you know, we're basically in October, which means it's not too long off for the season. Break it down for us.
Yeah, shockingly, the year, the fall, has gone ridiculously fast, and both the Gopher men and Gopher women play their first games this upcoming weekend, which is ridiculous, but here we are. And both teams come in with fairly high expectations, both ranked number 4 in the nation in the initial polls. The Gopher men predicted to win the Big Ten by the Big Ten coaches. The Gopher,
which, to be fair, that felt like a bit of a surprise to me. I actually thought Michigan would get the nod on that.
Well, and if you look, Michigan is ranked, the national media is taking Michigan ahead of the Gophers. Well, the Gophers are 4 in both polls. Michigan is 3 in both polls. The reason why Michigan nationally is getting the attention is they had 4 of the 5 first-round NHL draft picks this past June, all of who will suit up for the Wolverines this season, and they had an additional 3 first-round picks from last year who will all suit up for Michigan this season. So Michigan's offensive prowess is going to be ridiculous this year. The Wolverines are going to be able to score like crazy. Where Michigan's going to have to figure things out, and obviously it'll turn on their season, is going to be in goal. Strauss Mann, who was their star goaltender the last couple of years, signed a professional contract in the offseason. He's no longer there. So Michigan has a couple of untested goalies who they're going to have to try and figure out who can win the job, A, and will they be able to compete with the you know, additional high-scoring offenses in the Big Ten between Minnesota and Wisconsin and Notre Dame. So that's why I think the Big Ten coaches were giving the edge to Minnesota, is they know what they have with the Gopher defense. Ryan Johnson, Jackson Lacombe, Brock Faber, You've got three of the top defensemen in the conference right there, and Jack LaFontaine, who will be one of the top three, four goalies in the country once again. So the Gophers have that established defense, and I think that's why the Big Ten coaches gave them the nod over the Wolverines. But the Gophers also can score on offense. They returned Sam Poranta is gone. He's moved on to the Colorado Avalanche organization. But they returned Sammy Walker, who becomes the first ever three-time captain in Gopher history. They've got Ben Myers, who's going to be probably one of the top college free agents next year to sign with a pro team. And they bring in a ridiculously loaded freshman class. Matthew Knees was a second-round pick. I believe he was Toronto. He's apparently looked amazing in early practices and should have a high-profile role early with the Gophers. Chaz Lucius, highest, you know, excite level for a Gopher freshman in some time, arguably since we're talking the, you know, Blake Wheeler, Thomas Vanek, Eric Halla types. Lucius, a first-round draft pick by the Winnipeg Jets this season. The kid is a scoring marvel. A lot of people have tried to compare him with Cole Caulfield, who had, was a ridiculously offensive threat for the Badgers the last couple of years, Hobie Baker Award winner last year. He's got that natural sniper talent. We'll see how long it takes him to adjust to the college game, but if he can pick things up quickly, he is going to be a major threat to score goals for the Gophers this year. And like I said, they returned most of their lineup from last season. Really only Sampo Ranta and Brandon McManus, who entered the transfer portal in the offseason, moved on to Omaha, are the only two offensive threats that are missing for the Gophers this season. So there's definitely reason for optimism that they should be able to be at the top of the Big Ten again. Definite optimism. They'll be one of the best teams in the country. The state of Minnesota, once again, is loaded. The Gophers, Mankato, St. Cloud, UMD, all ranked in the top 10 in the country in the initial polls. So it should be a really fun season, and we're hoping that the Gophers can continue to live up to expectations, which every once in a while can be a problem.
You know, when you tell me somebody's name is Chaz and we're excited, I'm the Wedding Crasher references just get real, real deep in my head. I'm just going to be thinking about Meatloaf a lot with Chaz Lucius. That's all I have to say about that. Okay, the Gopher women.
Yeah, so the women, as we said, also ranked number four in the country, and it just shows the strength of the WCHA. Wisconsin predicted to once again win the conference is ranked number one in the country. Ohio State is ranked number two in the country. The Gophers are three. Minnesota Duluth is five. And it will be a packed top of the WCHA. The Gophers, again, open up with a big battle. They get the Buckeyes coming to town this weekend. Ohio State has had the Gophers' number ever since Nadine Moserall, former Gopher star and former Gopher assistant, has taken over that Buckeye program. She's really turned it around, and they have actually owned Minnesota the last few years. So it'll be interesting to see if the Gophers can and try and bounce back and get back to beating Ohio State like they should. It's going to be a bit of a weird year for the Gopher women. It is an Olympic year, so several players have been centralized and will spend time working out with the U.S. national team instead of competing with the Gophers. One of those being Grace Zumwinkel, the leading scorer last year for Minnesota. She would have been eligible to come back for a fifth-year senior this year. She will be on the U.S. national team and the U.S. Olympic team, no doubt, as well as Abby Murphy, sophomore, who ended up being the second leading scorer for the Gophers last season. She is also centralized and is more of a bubble candidate to make the U.S. Olympic team. So you're losing your top two scorers from a year ago who are trying to make the Olympic team to try and pick up a little bit offense back. The Gophers went on the transfer portal and brought in Savannah Norcross from Boston College, who was BC's leading scorer a year ago. So she moves from Hockey East to the WCHA and hopefully will step in to try and provide a little bit of that offense that's lost. But you've still got Taylor Heisey, who's a senior this year. She'll be able to put the puck in the net. Amy Potomac back for her final year as a Gopher. Hopefully she can pick up the form. She had leg injuries she's had the last couple of years, and can find things. And then in the net, you've got Lauren Bench, who was the grad transfer who came over from Bemidji State, who held down the goal for most of the year last year for Minnesota. She once again is back and should probably be the starter for Minnesota. Michaela Paul is now a junior. She's from Rochester. She played the backup role last year. I think you'll see her get a little bit more action this season. And the Gophers brought in Skylar Vetter, who is a highly touted freshman goaltender who might not necessarily see much action this season, but once Bench graduates, has a good chance to take over the number one role next year. So the Gophers did reload. They've got some good freshman talent, but they do have to make up a lot of offense. They'll be lost. You know, Wisconsin has four players they're missing from last year's team who's centralized with the U.S. national team. Ohio State has one who's on the Canadian national team. So all the top teams in the WCHA will be missing some high-level offensive talent trying to compete with trying to win spots on Olympic teams. But, you know, it should be another dogfight for those top four spots between the Gophers, Bulldogs, Buckeyes, and Badgers.
As it always has been. Blake, do you want to preview this game? I'll skip it if you want to skip it.
No, I mean, this is an interesting matchup, I'll be honest. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the run of bad injury luck Purdue is on right now, but it is
extraordinary. Let me see if what I can do offhand. David Bell's in the concussion protocol. He's hurt in some way. Or is it King Daru that's in the concussion protocol?
No, it is David Bell. Against Notre Dame, he got clocked against Notre Dame in week three and then missed last week's game with still being in the concussion protocol. And he's still in the protocol as of, I think, Monday or Tuesday this week.
David Bell, be well, man, because being in the protocol like after a week is not a great deal. And I want his brain to be functional as a human being.
So you've got that. That's one. There's several others. If you want to keep going.
Oh.
Or is that the only one that you know?
Well, I don't know if he's hurt, but didn't they yank Plummer?
They yanked him, but he's been doing that. Brown's been doing that for like 2 or 3 years now, yanking quarterbacks left and right. So, but he's not injured.
The fact that Purdue has wide receivers playing running backs is probably not a good sign.
I don't remember who was ahead of King Daru, but the whole reason I'm talking about King Daru's injury is because he was the backup. So whoever their starter is, he's hurt.
So yeah, in week two, Xander Horvath, their starting running back, broke his fibula.
Oh God!
And had to have surgery to repair that. And then so yeah, King Daru take over as the starting running back, but he was held out this last week due to a medical condition, and Brahm said that may hold him out the rest of the year. So they're down to their top running back is a redshirt freshman, Dylan Downing, and they've got guys like Jackson Anthrop, who's a wide receiver, practicing more running back. So yeah, running back, they're extremely thin. You mentioned David Bell, wide receiver. At tight end, their top tight end guy, Payne Durham. That's such an awesome name, too. What a name. He's also in the concussion protocol after taking a hit against Illinois, so he's probably doubtful for this Saturday. So, yeah, that's their top receiver, their top tight end, their top two running backs, all out with injuries.
And they like to yo-yo the quarterback.
Yeah, and Jeff Brohm likes to yo-yo the quarterback. I've never seen anyone so just – he just is so inclined to pull a quarterback out at a moment's notice, or just like he's, you know, I guess maybe it's just from watching Minnesota the past couple of years, where it's like Tanner Morgan's the guy, unless he's physically unable to go in the game. Tanner Morgan's the guy. But yeah, just like the last 2 weeks alone, I think Plummer was the starter to start the year, but the last two games we've seen both Plummer and Aiden O'Connell for Purdue against Notre Dame and then against Illinois last week. And I think O'Connell was the one who orchestrated the game-winning drive at the end of the game against Illinois. They hadn't scored a touchdown until Aiden O'Connell took over and led him down the field, I think on a 90-yard touchdown drive to eventually win the game for him. But I don't think Brohm has named a starting quarterback this week, and I mean, I doubt he will. If I was him, I'd just wait until the game. But I'm sure Minnesota's going to count on seeing both of them, and I think the fans should expect seeing both of them. But yeah, their offense is in an interesting situation right now. Their offensive line already wasn't very good. they really struggled even with Horvath and Daru to get a ground game going. I know last year that was a big struggle for them too. So you're already down your two running backs. Your offensive line isn't very good, so you really don't have much of a run game. They do still have talent at wide receiver. They've got the junior Milton Wright is pretty good. He'll be their top wide receiver if David Bell's out. I mentioned Jackson Anthrop. They've got a sophomore in TJ Sheffield. So there's talent there, but just not a lot of proven experience. It's just an open question how their quarterback's going to play. And they've also given up 6 sacks over the last 2 games. So the offensive line really not helping out the ground game or the passing game. And they've averaged 13 points per game their last 2 games against real opponents. They started the year
Whoa,
against
whoa, whoa,
Oregon
hold,
State,
hold, hold,
kind of.
hold up. In what world is a Brett Bielema-led Illinois team a real opponent?
Okay, yeah. As soon as I said that, I was like, oh, I forgot if it was Illinois. But Illinois beat Juggernaut Nebraska, so obviously they're for real.
What I'm hearing you say is that if Street was on the podcast right now, his prediction tonight would be hammer the under.
I mean, I'd be curious what the under is at, just looking at both of these teams. At least Purdue has an excuse to be bad offensively. At Minnesota, I don't know what their excuse is at this point, other than just lack of effort or game plan.
I can provide you that information as I had it looked out, and I'm shocked that it is as high as it is.
What is it?
The current spread as of 9 o'clock or so Tuesday night when we're recording this, Purdue is favored by 2.5 points, and the over-under is 47.5.
In what fucking world do they think 47 points are going to go up on that board?
I have
So that's like
no
a
idea.
that's like a 24 it's like a 24-21 game basically, kind of
That's like a 20, it's like
around that
a
ballpark.
20, it'd be like a 20,
27 or a 24-23,
yeah,
or
or
I mean
something like that.
that's your push. Those are your two push numbers, but holy crap. Now, again, watch me be completely wrong, and we open up the playbook and suddenly we have short passes and crossing routes and things that actually work, and but Jesus, that I mean, based on what we've seen, that's not hammer the under is what feels
Well,
right now.
the thing too, I haven't touched on the Purdue defense because for the first time in the Brom era, they actually seem to have a fairly good defense. And it starts in the secondary. They did lose one of their starting quarterbacks, Corey Trice, to an ankle injury that I think should sideline him for this game this Saturday. But they've also got a fifth-year senior at corner, Dedrick Mackey. They've got two really good safeties, Marvin Grant and Cam Allen, they really lean on a lot, even especially in the run game. Their secondary is very good, which I think will be maybe bad news for Minnesota's offense if they're going to, especially without Chris Upman Bell and rely on that same group of receivers last year that struggled to get separation. So they are not quite stout against the run. There's some running room up front there, but again, if they're going to stack the box because they know Minnesota can't pass the ball, that's going to be easier said than done for Minnesota. So I think it's the way Minnesota's defense has played the last 2 weeks, they're looking pretty good. The way Purdue's defense has played the last couple weeks in this season, they're looking very good. Because Purdue's really it's a bend but don't break defense. They've only allowed 8 trips to the red zone through their first 4 games, and they've only allowed 3 touchdowns from those 8 trips and 3 field goals. So it's pretty good defense from what I've seen. And I think Minnesota's offense will certainly have their work cut out for them, more so than they already did based on last week. So that's why I kind of think it's an interesting matchup. It's two teams with pretty good defense and two offenses that are struggling for different reasons. So it's kind of a who's gonna break who first.
So a traditional Big Ten slogathon, likely played in rain. Glorious.
And yeah, if this is not an ugly game, I will be shocked.
Well, here's for
This is a
being
slop. This is
here's
a
for
slop
here's for
fest.
being shocked in a way that makes, us happy, not Purdue fans. All right, predictions. I'll be honest, I didn't put any thought or effort into this. I'm going to make it up on the spot. Usually I at least come in with like something resembling a thought process. I have none. Well, fuck it. I'm the optimist on this blog, right? That's what I do. If I'm going to go out being wrong, I'm going to do it with a smile on my face. Minnesota remembers that if you run plays that work, you can score points. They don't do it extremely well, but they do it with more aplomb than against Bowling Green. Minnesota 24, Purdue 17. Who wants next? Somebody. Where's the excitement here? You're both.
Let Andy the pessimist go.
I am the pessimist, but I haven't quite gotten to the point where I'm pessimistic enough that we can lose to Purdue. It's a road game. The last few games against Purdue have been close. Admittedly, and I'm sure Purdue will bring it up several times, the controversy of last year's game where there was the phantom pass interference call that led to...
You mean the phantom pass interference call that followed the phantom pass interference call that allowed them to score the go-ahead touchdown?
I mean, the Big Ten refs are starting to get a reputation for being just as bad as the rest of the country. We all know that. But long story short, these games have been close. I mean, you remember in 2019 in West Lafayette, the Gophers got up to a huge lead and let Purdue sneak back into the game, and I think Minnesota only ended up winning that one by a touchdown after what looks like it should have been a blowout at halftime. So I have no doubt it's going to be a close game. These two teams, you know, Brom and PJ aren't really fans of one another. I'm sure there'll be some weird things going on, but I can't go full blow-it-up mode yet. So I do think it'll be a lower-scoring game, but I do think the Gophers will pull it off. I see them winning 24-21. Whether that's a late field goal by Trickett to win it or whether there's some shenanigans involving Purdue's kicker, I'm not really sure, but I'll say 24-21 Minnesota.
Come on, Blake.
I will
join
say,
us. Join us on the irrationally optimistic side.
Just to be clear, my prediction was done well in advance as I was writing my preview, so not influenced by any peer pressure situation, but to PJ's credit, I think maybe this is last year might have been a little bit of an exception, but they usually respond well after a loss. I think back to 2019, they lost to Iowa, they came back and beat Northwestern, and they lost to Wisconsin, they came back, beat Auburn in the bowl game. You look back even to the end of 2018, they lost Northwestern, then came back and beat Wisconsin on the road. I just think that this is a team that does respond well to losses, and that's really part of the PJ Flex culture is responding well, just making a response. I do expect them to play better this Saturday than they played last Saturday. I would be surprised if they came out and played flat again. But with that said, I do think it'll be an ugly game. I think it'll be a low-scoring game. I mean, I'd be elated if Minnesota just came out, you know, guns blazing and just started racking up touchdowns. But I will pick Minnesota 16-13. I think it's going to be close, ugly game, hammer the under. I'm not ready to despair just yet. If they lose this game, my expectations for the rest of the season will go down significantly, and it'll be a long bye week. But right now, as of this moment, I would predict Minnesota will prevail for the clean sweep between the three of us.
All right. So I did not get Street's prediction in advance. You will see that in the staff predictions. Of course, last week he said Tanner Morgan would throw over two touchdowns. Clearly that did not happen. I mean... Yeah, that didn't happen. But we'll have to see what he predicts this week. Don't be shocked if it's hammer the under. Do not be shocked if it's hammer the under. Well, friends, I'm going to close this out with a reminder. Home Field Apparel, they rock. Homefieldapparel.com. Use code DAILYGOPHER at checkout. And in the meantime, go Gophers. Sky you ma. Row the boat.
Go for through the boat.